welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And we are back. Are you ready for some more constitutional reading or information regarding the supreme law of the land? You know, some of the things I think that we're going to read, you know, it's important that we have protected rights. And I would say that voting is it's like a property right, right? We have as Madison said, we have rights in our property. We have property in our rights. And when it comes to a self-governed system, people do need to be able to exercise their right to vote. But the question is, what can we vote on? So, in a Republican form of government, we're not supposed to be able to vote on issues. We're supposed to be able to vote on representation, and that representation stands on principles and our issues. And this is the whole problem I have with the party. The parties create these delineated factions, and most of these delineated factions take us away from the fundamentals of individual sovereignty and individual liberty. This is why when we have Republican presidents, since we've gotten a Republican president with Obamacare, remember it was a repeal it was just to completely repeal it. Then they came along and said, well, we want to repeal and replace. Well, hold on. Why is it that we've created a compromise when it comes to the Constitution? Well, that's because the people want it. If the people want the government to mandate health care, then you have to pass an amendment, just like the Department of Transportation, just like everything else. You can't usurp the power. And the fact is, the Republican Party has been supporting the usurpation of power along with the Democrats. In other words, they've been in league with each other. At the national level, there is very little difference. Very little difference. And as a matter of fact, they both use each other for their own advantages of taking control of our liberties. It's sad. It's sad that many people do not get this or understand this. This is why we need a party. We need a party to destroy all parties. We need a party to get everybody to understand that if we focus on the Constitution and full compliance to the Constitution, our liberties will be restored, our liberties will be protected, and we won't have to look over our shoulder for political agendas to destroy our liberties again. If we decide that we want to create some Department of Education or delegate some power to the federal government, then it requires an amendment. And if we can't get there, then so be it. The states will be it's not like the states can't do these things. The only thing the states can't do is they can't print money. And so as we move forward and we get into, I think we're going into the 19th Amendment. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. I would highly, and you've heard me say this before, I buy from and I would recommend you look at Timber Nation if you're looking for any type of solid hardwood furnishings. I love the fact that you can actually get quality hardwood furnishings, and it's RTA type of stuff. In other words, it doesn't come assembled. It comes, you know, flat stock, ready to assemble. And the shipping's free, folks. I mean, when you look at the cost of shipping in hardwood, check it out. As you actually start looking at going and buying furnishings or rack or what have you, you're going to be paying an arm and a leg to these stores. Why don't you just go to the source who can make it to you and actually get it to you, probably for the same price as that cheap crap coming from China? And that's just because of the shortages and inflation, the cost of everything is going up. Well, here's an interesting thing. Natural resources that are available and that people can actually go out and get their hands on, like trees and so forth, those things that are made right here, you won't probably find the price going skyrocketing like you will in some of the things that are coming from China that we, you know, that you got to have, right? Because it's sitting off the coast and the shelves are empty, and this is how they can get away with what we call price gouging, because, oh, well, I don't have any more, so I'm going to raise the price on these things because they're really, really rare, being able to buy this laminate particle board cheap crap. But anyway, I don't want to linger too long on my sponsorships, but I will tell you, I am nothing but impressed with Timber Nation. Great family, great company, great products. RadioDustCovers.com. If you're looking to protect any of your investments, such as your radio gear, if you're a ham radio operator, or your electronics, if you're an audiophile, or anything like that, RadioDustCovers.com. Red Pill Expo around the corner, literally just less than a month away. Are you going? Are you planning on being there? I will tell you that we will be having a meeting, and whether that meeting becomes a Zoom meeting, and actually I think it will become a Zoom meeting for those legislators who can't personally get there. That's what we have to do, because we need to have this conversation with every legislator. And one of the things that we need is we need you to get them informed on this. We've got less than a month away. Anyway, our comment line, 425-270-5416, okay? And let's, without any further ado, let's just go ahead and dive into where we left off. We just finished Prohibition, and as we noticed, this was actually giving the federal government jurisdiction over a new law that they had the ability to define punishment and actually dole out the punishment as well, just like with treason and so forth. The manufacturing of liquors, they could go after the manufacturers, they could go after the resellers, all of that. So it gave them very broad brush scope of, you know, of it, I don't want to say enforcement, because there was nothing in this amendment that gave them the power to enforce, because it said Section 2 right here. The Congress and the several states shall have concurrent power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. The actual enforcement has to be done by the militia, because that's still the only line in the Constitution for the execution of the laws is to be given to the militia. You know, isn't it interesting? Even at this point in time, we're talking about 1917, and they still had not woke up and realized, hey, you know, we've kind of dismantled the militia and it really doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, we've never changed the fact that the only mechanism to execute the laws of the Union is the militia. And we still don't have that, folks. This is why we need to get the militia back. This is why we need everybody to wake up and get involved in your unorganized militia. When I say unorganized, that doesn't mean that you can't be organized to some extent. You're just not organized for being called into service. You're not organized underneath the state apparatus, because the state at this point has turned its back on this part of the Constitution. And that's really unfortunate. This is why you can still create an official militia if your sheriff has the nads to do that. And what I'm saying here, folks, is that your sheriff has the ability to actually organize a militia for the county and utilize them, especially if you happen to be in a county that may be kind of a rural, urban type of county where it may be in the outstretches of a large city. I'll give you a good example, Riverside. Riverside County does not go into Los Angeles, but it is a urban, rural county. And so if the sheriff down there, because they do have, and it has been known where activists have gone down into Riverside County and have protested and those types of things. As a matter of fact, Al Sharpton was the one that led a protest out onto the freeway. The sheriff should have arrested every single one of those people, thrown them into the jails throughout the county, and held them on, a very, not even a trumped up, but on very serious charges, because they could have. They stopped commerce. And actually, I truly believe that even if no accident or harm had occurred, as far as physical harm, what should have happened was, every single person should have been responsible for the financial impact of delaying all the commerce that was supposed to flow on it was Freeway 91 that they got out onto. And all of that, the people that were sitting there driving trucks that were earning, wages or what have you, companies all should have been compensated for the loss of wages for the tie-up that they put on that system, that road system. And so if you start making them have to pay for the consequences instead of slapping them, Sharpton should have had to pay. And I'll tell you what, he would have thought twice the next time of leading people onto the freeway in Ferguson. Anyway, let's get into the 19th Amendment when we come back, and we will be able to dive more into the rest of the Constitution and the amendments. Who knows? We might be either done today. We should be done by tomorrow. Anyway, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
And so here's something that's kind of interesting. When you look at the proposal of an amendment, when Congress, and actually, again, here is an amendment that the states actually requested Congress to provide this amendment. And so the 19th Amendment is basically the right that all people, regardless of gender, have a right to vote, that they cannot be denied their ability to vote for representation. The fact is that we shouldn't actually be having the ability to vote on a lot of ballot measures or issues
But that's because our paradigm has shifted to where we actually vote for these types of things, such as taxes, you know, sales tax, property tax, and those types of things. And if we're going to throw those types of things out to the public, there needs to be some limitations on those who can vote. Because if you're not a citizen, then you can't vote. If you're not a citizen that owns property, you shouldn't be able to vote on property measures such as taxes and those types of creating a toll tax or what have you. Anyway, the 19th Amendment is the right of the citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. The execution of this article will be done by the militia because Congress has the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union in accordance with Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15. Pretty simple, right? All you got to do is remember some of these really key things, and you too can say, in accordance with Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15. And people go, wow, that guy really knows his Constitution. No, not really. But there are key things that, you know, such as the in accordance with your oath of office, in accordance with Article 6, subsection, or actually Article 6, Section 3, there is no subsection to 3. So it would be Article 6, Section 3, in accordance with the supreme law of the land. Anyway. Learn these things. It's not hard. This is not rocket science. If a dummy like me can get this and understand this and teach this, then you could probably do a better job. An unratified article. And this is very, very important because all this time, now that we're looking at 1926, under Teddy Roosevelt, back in the early 1900s, Teddy Roosevelt created the Department of Commerce and Labor. Neither are within the Constitution as far as the necessity, because we're only talking about commerce for the taxation of goods coming in and the standards of what we can ship overseas, but not what we can produce. In other words, Congress does not have the power over the production of commerce. They have the controls over what we can ship, because we can't ship, you know, weapons to our enemies. You know, so they do have that kind of control over the exportation, and they have this control over the interstates, you know, being able to get along, where one state can't start dictating to another state how they have to make their goods, how they have to make their products, such as California dictating to Michigan how they had to make their cars because they wanted emission standards. If California wants emission standards and California can start making their own cars, and then they can start, you know, basically saying if the cars don't have, you know, these types of standards in them, then, you know, you can't buy them. And actually, I don't even think they could do that, but they could actually start charging fees and assessments on people to buy those types of cars, where they go, well, you know, it's not worth buying the cars from Detroit because we're being taxed on that stuff because of the emission standards. And so California utilized the government, the federal government, to violate the Commerce Clause in getting Michigan into producing cars for California the way California wanted, when most of the rest of the states didn't care at that point in time. Anyway, this was proposed in 1926. This was proposed with actually President Coolidge championing this amendment, and it was rejected. Section 1, the Congress shall have the power to limit, regulate, and prohibit the labor of persons under 18 years of age. There it is. Strictly a child labor law. Or an amendment to give the federal government the ability to regulate labor. Everybody and all of the states saw this as a way the federal government could poke their head in. What didn't happen and why the states didn't stand up and say, hey, why do you have a Department of Labor and Commerce? Those things are not constitutional. You can't be regulated. You can't even be involved because it's not an enumerated power. Shut those things down. But the states failed to do that. They failed to do that with the Department of Agriculture. Why? Because the farmers, you know, begged the federal government to protect them. This, the reason why the federal government has actually broke these barriers was a lot of times because they were asked, the train companies during the early age of the train era started having problems, and they started begging the federal government to help regulate them, to help protect them, because the competition was, you know, becoming very steep. There were train companies that were actually on the verge of bankruptcy and so forth. And so they asked the federal government to step in to help regulate, to keep, you know, some of these really powerful, mighty, you know, train companies from being able to overpower all of them. And anyway, it's at our own fault. It's almost like when the Mormons in the 1860s, I believe, it was around that time, started actually having the polygamy and those types of things growing in Utah. Well, the other states started saying, hey, you got to get involved in marriage. You got to regulate that. So, you know, when you want to look at what really opened the door for the federal government to start getting involved in religion and religious practices, you can blame, you know, the people who beg these things to, you know, to be occurring. So I should say for these usurpations to occur, you know, Amtrak, agriculture, all of these things, we kind of created this nightmare ourselves by saying, you've got to get involved. What we should have been doing was we should have basically been looking at our states and allowing the states to actually have the controls necessary and keeping the federal government out of these things. So have we learned our lesson yet? Because look at what they're doing to us now with all these mandates. Now, the 20th Amendment, because this was never ratified, right? Oh, no, I didn't read Section 2. The power of the several states is unimpaired by this article, except that the operation of state laws shall be suspended to the extent necessary to give effect to legislation enacted by Congress. So in other words, this, you know, Congress shall have the power by appropriate legislation, kind of similar language, but it's still, there's still nowhere in any of these amendments that have wiped out the execution to be done by the militia and that the federal government could create its own enforcement agency. You see my point? This was all about language and the framers. And I honestly believe nobody really understood all of this. And nobody understood that part of the militia, because you can already see that the federal government had the ATF back then. They had the FBI. They already started creating federal enforcement agencies and enforcing laws that the federal government had no constitutional standing in. And so in looking at the big picture here, folks, they even weren't aware. They just, when they put these things in, they never said that they had the ability to execute these laws. It still pointed to the militia. And so they just assumed that they could execute these laws. But you're not going to find one amendment that says that they can actually execute these laws and take away the militia's responsibility in executing. So the 20th article, or the 20th amendment, section 1, the terms of the president and vice president shall end at noon on the 20th day of January, and the terms of senators and representatives at noon on the third day of January of the years in which such terms would have ended if this article had not been ratified, and the terms of the successors shall then begin. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meeting shall begin at noon on the third day of January, unless they shall by law appoint a different day. Section 3. If at the time fixed for the beginning of the term of the president, the president-elect shall have died, and the reason, just so you know, we did actually have a president die 20 days after he was inaugurated. And he died because he caught a cold, because it was so cold during his inauguration that it turned into pneumonia later on, and he ended up dying. The vice president-elect shall become the president. If a president shall not have been chosen before the time fixed for the beginning of his term, or if the president-elect shall have failed to qualify, then the vice president-elect shall act as president until a president shall have qualified. And the Congress may, by law, provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice president-elect shall have qualified. Now, see here, I'm going to take a quick aside. They talk about shall have qualified. I truly believe that if one state stands up and says, hey, Obama, we don't buy this birth certificate thing, then Obama does not qualify. I believe that when it comes to the qualifications, the states should be able to veto, you know, the qualifications of the president or the vice president and demand full disclosure on proof or provide evidence, or if not, then that person can be disqualified. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's get back to where I left off, but actually let me do one more quick aside. We're reading now in Section 3 where there's this concern over the president dying before he gets elected. Why is this all of a sudden being injected into an amendment of the Constitution? Well, you got to remember that this amendment was being done in 1932. And it looked like there was going to be, because this was before the election of 1932, and Hoover was being challenged by FDR. And FDR, both of these guys were hardcore leftists. The New Deal that was implemented in America regarding the Depression was Hoover's New Deal. It's just that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was able to package that New Deal and label it and call it a New Deal better than Hoover. But here's the thing. We're looking at what happens if a president we elect shall die. Well, what they wanted to do was they wanted to make sure, and they were throwing this in there, but America did not know about Franklin Delano Roosevelt's health, about his, you know, being stricken with polio, couldn't walk, and so forth. And so this is one of the reasons why, you know, people did not see, you know, Franklin. It wasn't the age of television where they could have all the cameras actually shooting. And the press did everything they could to suppress this information, because they knew Franklin Delano Roosevelt was far more communist than Hoover was. As a matter of fact, if you ever go look into what they call the Venona Project, and you look at the history of the Venona Project, a part is because having gone through a tour, a guide that I knew personally was telling us on this tour, because I was up there for an Intel Community Collections training. And so at the end of this training, or at the end of the day that we were up there, this guy says, I'm going to take you on a tour through the NSA museum. And they had these packages, these little pamphlets of the Venona Project. And they said this was the very first project, or one of the very first projects that the NSA had, that was established by FDR. And what we were to do was we were supposed to find the active KGB agents that were in the United States. And they had a list, because in the communications that were going back and forth that they were intercepting, they knew that there was somewhere around 250 KGB agents active, and they were finding that many of these were active in the government circles. And what they were also finding was the majority of them had cover names, you know, like Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse and those types of things. And some of them actually used their own names. And when it finally came out that President Roosevelt was briefed that one of the agents had a peculiar single name, and that name was Eleanor, shortly after that information was disclosed, because this was one of the last few agents that they had not been able to identify who it was, but it was kind of obvious. And so that was when Franklin Delano Roosevelt shut the Venona Project down. And so you can read up on the history of this, and you'll be surprised to find out. And actually, you shouldn't be surprised, because there were a lot of communist sympathizers in the United States. Even Teddy Roosevelt, when communism started getting taught at Harvard, I believe that was his alma mater, and he missed it by, I think, 8 years or something like that. When he graduated, just a few years later, communism was being taught. And he felt like he really missed out. And he really clung to this idea of totalitarianism, that the state should take on bigger and more responsibilities, which he used as justification for becoming the trust buster, for, you know, protecting people from evil corporations and so forth. And I'm going, folks, you have to look at, you know, all of these little factors of how communism started penetrating. Go listen to and read the content from Trevor Lawton. I have not spent the time in researching communist and communist infiltration in America like that man has. As a matter of fact, I have not spent a lot of time. My focus has always been trying to find the solutions. And so everybody else wants to dig into the problems, and that's great. Not too many people decided, well, we're gonna really work on the solution. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of organizations out there that don't really work on a solution. What they do, like Tactical Civics or what is a Center for Self-Governance, they're not really providing you a solution. They're providing you a methodology that you can kind of take back local level and so forth, but they're not pointing you to the actual solution of what it takes to get the federal government back into the framework, those boundaries of the Constitution, which is what Madison and Jefferson did, and which is what we are not even proposing. We are asserting that this is the only process, because Madison asserted it. But anyway, I digress. Anyway, so let's go back to let me find the beginning of this paragraph. Actually, there's no sentence. Okay, so, wow, this is a long sentence. If a president shall not have been chosen before the time fixed for the beginning of his term, or if the president-elect shall have failed. Keep in mind, they knew FDR was one of the candidates to qualify. Then the vice president-elect shall act as president until president shall have qualified, and the Congress may by law provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice president-elect shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as president, or the manner in which one who is to act shall be selected, and such person shall act accordingly until a president or vice president shall have qualified. Now, if you look at Franklin Delano Roosevelt and you go into the details, you'll actually find out who his vice presidents were. And his first vice president was John Nance Garner. And then it was Harry A. Wallace, and then Truman. And I believe it was, if you look at it, and the reason why I'm saying this is because if you listen to my music, Fanfare for a Common Man, it was one of these vice presidents, and I want to say it was Harry A. Wallace, that commissioned Stuart, that commissioned Stuart, or Stuart Copeland, he's the drummer for the Police. Aaron Copland, see, I'm really bad with names, and I don't know why, because there's just so many commonalities of names, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, Aaron Copland was commissioned to do the song Fanfare for the Common Man by the U.S. government, and Wallace actually asked him to do this. He said, we need a very majestic type of music that we can actually utilize to help bolster the spirits of the common man, because the intent was to get a Bolshevik revolution in America by getting the common man, the poor man, the lower middle class, the working man, to stand up and say, we want some of your stuff, rich folks. Because that's what the Bolshevik Revolution was about. But anyway, I'm sorry about going down that little rat hole, but it gives you some insight. And the insight is, why do I use Fanfare for the Common Man? Because I knew this, and I want to use the exact same song to get the common man to stand up for his individual rights, not collective rights. We don't have collective rights. We can't have collective salvation. That's what Obama was big on talking about. If you ever read any of Obama's speeches before he became president, while he was president, he always harped on collective salvation, that we have to save each other. That can't happen. That cannot happen. Anyway, as we go forward, Section 4 of the 20th Amendment. The Congress may, by law, provide for the case of the death of any of the persons from whom the House of Representatives may choose a president whenever the right of choice shall have developed upon them, and for the case of the death of any persons from whom the Senate may choose a vice president whenever the right of choice shall have developed upon them. I mean, they started really going down this rat hole of people dying and what to do in case somebody was to die. Section 5. Section 1 and 2 shall take effect on the 15th day of October following the ratification of this article. Now, the ratification of this article was in 1933, after FDR was seated. Section 6. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of its submission. So, in other words, they had a 7-year expiration because they felt that FDR wouldn't do a third term. Up to this point, people only did 2 terms. Then when FDR did the greedy thing of doing another term, and he justified it by finally going into the war in World War II, saying, oh, well, we need the continuity. You know, there was all that kind of justification that, you know, it forced Congress to do the next thing, which was the limitations of terms. Actually, I don't think it was the next thing. But anyway, this is the 21st Amendment. The 18th article, and you know what this is? This is really, I believe, the repeal of Prohibition, but we'll be right back into the details of the 21st Amendment. We'll be right back after this, folks. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now the repeal of the 18th Amendment. The 18th Article of Amendment to the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. The transportation or importation into any state, territory, or possession of the United States for delivery or use therein of intoxicating liquors in violation of the laws thereof is hereby prohibited. This article shall be... And so what is this? So they repealed it, but the transportation or importation into any state, territory, or possession of the United States for delivery or use therein of intoxicating liquors in violation of the laws thereof is hereby prohibited. So, in other words, they repealed it, and they basically said that it can now be transported unless it is being prohibited by some states or some laws. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall be ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by conventions in the several state as provided in the Constitution within 7 years from the date of submission. So what they did was this was one time where this was to be done by conventions in the several states. Now, I believe you'll hear some people say, well, you know, there's never been a, you know, conventions of an amendment where the states actually had to go down this path. And so here is evidence that there was a requirement that the states actually had to convene a convention to ratify the repealing of prohibition. And here's the other interesting thing, that when they went down this path of repealing, well, first off, let me point out that there was an expiration date. They gave the state 7 years to either ratify this or the repeal was gone. And so they started putting expiration dates. They didn't have to do that. They could have just left it alone and let it, you know, sit, like the very first amendment that's still lingering out there that will actually force representation, that Congress cannot represent anything more than 50,000 people. We need to ratify that. Anyway, as you also see, the other thing that this didn't do was this did not disassemble the ATF or the the alcohol part of in the alcohol enforcement branch and agency. What ended up happening was they started, you know, utilizing the people that they hired for enforcement in other ways. Very few people got laid off, my friends. When it came to government, when government hires people, they do everything they can to actually keep those people on because they don't want to reduce their costs. Government has always, always tried to increase their budget every year. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the federal budget year by year by year, it has always gone up. So think about that. There's a reason why government operates the way it does, and it's insatiable for your money. Anyway, this is why I really believe people need to read The Wealth of Nations to understand our responsibility in keeping government fiscally responsible as well as within their enumerated powers. All right, the 22nd Amendment, Section 1, and this was proposed in 1947, ratified in 1951. No person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected president shall be elected to the office of the president more than once. In other words, if you were vice president and you became president, and there were 2 years of that presidency term, that counted as your first term. But this article shall not apply to any person holding the office of president when this article was proposed by the Congress, and shall not prevent any person who may be holding the office of president or acting as president during the term within which this article becomes operative from holding the office of president or acting as president during the remainder of such term. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the states within 7 years from the date of submission to the states by the Congress. And so when you look at FDR and FDR's service, he died in 1945, and this was proposed in 1947. So it was a response to FDR basically being a hog and, you know, hogging up the seat, the billet, or what have you. But bottom line, this was something that they actually wanted to ensure that presidents could not actually become kings, because there was a likelihood that we might actually have, and look at Kennedy. If Kennedy wasn't assassinated, there was a likelihood that Kennedy, because he was young, could have actually become president 3, 4, 5 times. I mean, how long would that guy live? So what they wanted to do was make sure that there were term limits set on the president. Now, most people believe the term limits on Congress is a good thing. I'm not a fan of term limits myself, except for probably the executive, because the executive is viewed like a king. But representatives of the people, the term limits does not solve anything. Keeping them within the enumerated powers is more important, and I believe Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is the vehicle we need to use, because if a person is a good, ardent supporter of the Constitution, then why would we want to term limit them out? What we want to do is we want to get rid of those public servants who are violating the Constitution, not those who are the ardent defenders of the Constitution. I mean, what we want is to keep those guys that are pointing out the guys that are trying to violate the Constitution so we can get rid of them. Anyway, the 23rd Amendment, proposed in 1960, ratified in 1961. The district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall appoint in such manner as the Congress may direct a number of electors of president and vice president equal to the whole number of senators and representatives in Congress to which the district would be entitled if it were a state, but in no event more than at least populous state. They shall be in addition to those appointed by the states, but they shall be considered for the purposes of the election of president and vice president to be electors appointed by a state, and they shall meet in the district and perform such duties as provided by the 12th article of the amendment, which is the electors and the process. The Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by the appropriate legislation. So this is where the District of Columbia basically said, we want representation in the choosing of the president. They weren't asking for real representation as a state where they would be able to elect two senators and elect a representative. Now, those things have kind of changed because, as we see, Washington, D.C. is trying to actually become a state. But when we went through the ratification debates, it was clear that D.C. was to be autonomous. It was not to be its own state, because states are sovereign, and states all of a sudden have the ability to start oppressing and or driving politics in the national seat, which they should not be able to do. That's why Congress has exclusive legislative authority over the seat of government. No state has that. Anyway, here's the 24th Amendment. Section 1, the right of the citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice president, for electors for president or vice president, or for senator or representative in Congress shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state by reason of failure to pay any poll tax or other. Section 2, the Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. See, we still haven't gotten anywhere where Congress has granted the execution themselves the execution of enforcement. And this right here was proposed in 1962, ratified in 1964. And this was a part of the Civil Rights Act, but this was the constitutional part of it. In other words, it was basically reaching into the states and saying that states could not create poll taxes or limitations, financial types of limitations and barriers for people to be able to vote. So, anywho, the 25th article. Now this is interesting because this is what's really on the table right now for Biden, because Biden is completely incompetent and he can be quickly removed. And I honestly see that happening. And I see that happening not in the next year. I believe Biden is going to cling on, because I think what they want to do is they want to make sure that Kamala Harris's first term, when she takes over as vice president, will be less than 2 years. This will give her a full almost 10 years if they're capable of stealing the elections in the next two elections. She will be the tyrant to destroy America. She is a communist, by the way. Anyway, proposed in 1965, ratified in 1967. Section 1. In case of the removal of the president from office or of his death or... Well, we ran out of time. I'm sorry. We will get to the 25th, 26th, and 27th amendments in our next episode. As you can see, we're boiling to some amendments that actually have ramifications today in the last days of this republic. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.